This is Movies, a podcast by the Act of Cinema. With me today, of course, it is Haas. It's a very hot day in Costa Rica as we're recording this, April 2nd. And your nickname was the April Fool when you were in high school. Was it because you shit your pants on Spring Photography Day?
Yeah, Spring Photography Day, not a thing here. April Fool's thing, not a thing here. So that's like an American thing. I didn't go to school in the States. Yeah. So no, I didn't shit my pants. I had one classmate that shit his pants 3 times in 1 year. And I think I was the only one that would talk to him.
Wow.
his only friend.
Was it Billy Madison situation where he's a 48-year-old construction worker who showed up to school drunk every day?
No, he was just very shy. So instead of asking to go to the bathroom, he would rather just shit or piss himself. I remember he also pissed himself. And I would just be like, just fucking go to the bathroom. Like, why are you so afraid of asking? No one's going to say no shit, you know? And I remember very vividly that he, like, it just started smelling like shit. And here, it's not like in the States where you just wear regular clothes. Here, you have a uniform that you have to wear. So from, like, first to sixth grade, you have to wear a button-up white, like, business shirt. Not as thick as a business shirt, but, like, a white button-up shirt and gray pants. Mm-hmm. Long pants the whole day. So when this boy was shitting himself, we couldn't hear it. But he just started leaning forward weirdly, right? In a way that, you know, no one sits like
this.
Did
he start rocking back and forth so it would all come out quickly?
Well, no, he wouldn't rock, because if he would rock, he would just smudge
it.
He's
pancaking it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he would just forward, so I guess the turd wouldn't do that. But then flies would come into the classroom and start, like, getting on his pants as he's leaning forward.
Oh my god.
And then there was just like I mean this kid would have really, like, big turds, because there was just a cloud of stink around him. But no one would say anything. And then the teacher was kind of like, do you need to go to the bathroom? He was like, no. And everyone was like, go fucking...
You're covered in flies. Anymore, what the fuck are you talking about? No. Yeah. It sounds like the Amityville Horror, except he shit himself.
Yep. And another time, you just hear like a stream of water hitting the floor. And then everyone just... Like, everyone moved their desk away from him, and he was right in the middle, just drooling out of his penis.
Wow.
Just, you know, no pressure. Just like, it was just falling down, like dripping out of his dick. It was third grade, so I was what, 8 years old, 9 years oldish. I remember I gave him my guinea pig because he was moving to, like, the country, and he lost it within like a day.
What? Yeah, this kid's fucking retarded. Why would you give him any? You should give him what was it? Muzzy. You remember Muzzy?
No.
Well, you lived in England. I think there was plenty of people you'd call Muzzy there, but that's not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking of the children's educational software.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
You should Google. Like, maybe that's what this episode's on tonight, is Muzzy, the children's educational video series from 1979. You should look this up.
Okay. Muzzy, how do you spell it?
I think it's exactly what you think, but be careful. I know there's new regulations in certain countries now about hate crime. So you spell it the wrong way, guess what? You're going to jail. You're going to prison.
Educational program.
Well, as Hans looks this up, have you seen any new movies lately? Because we're going into this episode without a theme. See, we've had 4 or 5 guests lined up, and then for any number of reasons, where are they? I don't know. They must have all died. Must have all passed away. It's a very cursed year, 2024.
Let me see. Where are we when we did newest? Nope. Oh, yeah. I saw a movie called Modern Girls from the 80s. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
It's another Dan Aykroyd film?
Kramer.
No, I haven't heard of
this. No, it had Virginia Madsen, Chris Nash. That's the two biggest names. But it's very 80s comedy, kind of After Hours-y, which is why I was interested in seeing it. But it's one of those obscure movies from the 80s and 70s that I've started looking for on YTS, where It's just movies with some recognizable actors that I've never heard of before, and this was one of them. And I was just curious about it. It wasn't great, but it let me I found the trailer here.
By all means, let's take a look at this.
How is it? Oh, sorry. Is it they changed the layout of this thing, so now I have to click over here. Okay.
Okay, we are taking a look at Modern Girls from 1986. This is the trailer, and Hans, you picked this movie out. You spelled Muzzy so fucking wrong, I think.
I know.
That's like you spelled Mussolini.
Why don't you stop looking so hard?
Between now and tomorrow, Margot, Cece, Kelly, and Cliff will find what they are looking for.
Who are you people?
I will if you will.
And something they never imagined in each other.
Ready?
Modern Girls, featuring the music of Depeche Mode, Anthony and the Cat, Floyd Joy, Ice House, and Tony Bennett.
I love that this was a thing in the 20th century where you could just promote, hey, we have music from band, band, yeah. band. And that might appeal to people.
That's very hip.
Starring Cindy Gibb, Virginia Madsen, Clayton Rohner, and Daphne
oh.
Zuniga.
Cool people have feelings too.
Modern Girls.
Wow.
Yeah, I was half paying attention.
There's nothing exciting in that trailer that would want to get me to watch.
No,
why did you pick this movie?
Just because I was curious. I've never heard of it, and it had like a similar theme to some 80s movies that I've seen recently. So I was like, let's see. It was bad. It's not good.
You know what it reminds me
Very
of
predictable.
the Jim Carrey movie Once Bitten. That's what that looked like.
Don't even know what that
Why
is.
don't we watch the
Is that
trailer to
old?
that? Yeah, so this is from the same time period. Once Bitten. I remember he's into an older woman. She's a vampire. And this is a very common trope in the 80s in comedies. There's a gay black man who's kind of her butler servant, much like the Golden Girls sequel series, Golden Palace, starring Don Cheadle. This is Once Bitten. Hey, the same YouTube channel, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Beautiful lady vampire Lauren Hutton knows a delicious young virgin when she sees one. And Mark Kendall finds out his sexy
Is that
one night
trailer?
stand has been around for
This is like a video store advert.
Oh.
With normal problems.
I want to, but I want it to be special.
Oh, this is what, In Living Color, Jim Carrey?
Before In Living Color, in fact.
Oh, wow.
I haven't had anything this pure since the Vienna Boys Choir hit town.
Has been around for Is that Jeffrey?
I'm 319 years old.
From Fresh Prince.
Mark Kendall is necking finally happened with a vampire.
Or is it Samuel Jackson from Django?
His customers. Get out of here!
His image.
Look, I'm not there.
And his mind.
Oh wow, I love your outfits.
I'm not wearing a costume.
You know what I remember? I remember watching this on like UPN in the middle of the day when I was sick. Because everybody loved Jim Carrey in the 90s. And they played this. Because obviously UPN is not getting Ace Ventura or something a year or two after it came out in theaters. And I remember trying to watch the movie without my mom like coming in and watching it with me. Because there's so much sexual humor in this film. Like he's getting his thigh sucked. There's gay sex in the shower jokes. And I'm just like fat, like jumping back and forth between the channels.
You don't want your mom to be here when the jokes get awkward.
Yeah, that's the worst when you're watching a movie and there's a gay scene and then your mom walks in and thinks you're just watching gay videos. That happened like this
Yeah,
week.
you just have to, yeah, you have to put a cushion on your lap and you're just like, what? What? Go away. Can you tell me a little bit about Last Night with the Devil?
Late Night
'Cause
with
I
the Devil.
saw, oh sorry, yeah, Late Night, because I saw that you posted a scathing review that does not go with a 100% Rotten Tomatoes score, so I wanted to. I don't still don't know if don't know if it's still 100, but
97
your
now.
Of it. Okay.
So it's not close to that at all. It's just one of these situations where it's this schlocky Shudder Psycho Goreman style horror movie that has come out and it stars an actor that everyone likes the idea of him being a lead, David Desmalshian. I believe is how you pronounce his full name.
Something
and
like
he's
that, yeah.
He's not like an unlikable actor or anything. He's always good in his supporting roles and these big blockbuster movies like The Suicide Squad or Dune or The Dark Knight. Any movie I've seen him in, he's been good. But people are really sucking off the idea of him being a leading man. And in this movie, he does not do anything elevated with his performance. It's kind of borderline what you would expect. There's nothing special about it. The whole film is ill-prepared. It's a mess. It starts with voiceover from Stacy Keach, but there, and also it's a found footage movie that does not bother putting any effort into appearing like it's found footage. It's clearly some sort of VHS filter in, or not, maybe not even VHS, but they crop it in 4x3. They try to add one of these stock filters from probably like DaVinci or something on top of that for the talk show segments. The people don't talk like it's the 1970s.
Of course.
They cut to behind-the-scenes footage where it's just standard fucking shooting like you would with a normal camera, but they throw a black and white color grade on it. And it's supposed to be, newly captured. Like, it's not even close to that. You would never believe that if you didn't have that Stacy Keach voiceover at the beginning that somebody paid probably $250 for. The very, like, the third act, I would say, not the very end. There are moments where it's impossible that this is found footage because you're seeing things from one character's perspective. That's a delusion. And then the entire ending gives up on that. So it's like, I thought we did narration and everything, but that's kind of irrelevant, and it leans fully into this is a motion picture, and you're going to see a bunch of psychological abnormality, whatever. It's a mess. It's a total mess, and by no means would a movie like this that wasn't in the horror genre make it to 90%, 97%, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes critics treat horror the same way that they treat Marvel movies, the same way that they treated that entire genre in the last 10 years. If it's watchable, it's certified fresh. It's a great movie. It's a cult classic. Oh, it's got cult vibes. One of the other kind of niche to most people, but to me, one of the most inauthentic registers of any sort of inauthenticity was an exorcism style sequence where somebody, one of the characters on the stage, reaches for a medallion, and it's not a cross. It's not a crucifix. It's like a little fucking, I don't know, voodoo, Haitian, whatever it is. I don't know. In 1970 something, you battle the devil with Catholicism, not to turn into Ryan Katz or Rivera on the show, but that's what you would do. But there's no question about that. You're not going, oh, here's my, it turned into Exorcist Believer for a second, that, you know, that sequence.
Especially if it's set on the States, right?
Yes.
Like, if this was set in Saudi Arabia, fine. But if it's set in the States in the 70s, yeah, Catholicism is like the number one religion.
Absolutely.
The country it's being ruled with. So they weren't brave enough to... See, that's the... I feared it a little bit because I liked the trailer, but modern horror has... I don't know. I feel like... I don't know if it's like a lack of effort or a lack of, I don't want to say a lack of care, because I know that this director's care, but why set something up in the 70s if you're not going to take the effort to have your actors speak like they do in the 70s so that the immersion is not lost when they say, I don't know, like for the 200th time and it sounds like a millennial speaking? Why go through the process of making it found footage if you're not going to go all out with the found footage thing and then just lose interest halfway? And I don't know who owns Shudder. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Shuts.
But is that because you know how most streaming services are losing money?
Mm-hmm.
It would be hard for me to believe that Shudder, when all of their horror productions seem to be kind of like this, where the concept is like, okay, I can see where this could be interesting. Hey, a robot Santa Claus that murders people, that sounds like it could be fun and stupid. And then you watch the movie and you're just kind of like, it's just stupid and boring and effortless and styleless and just sucks. And it seems like every time I see something that was released on Shudder or produced for them or, you know, released on their service, it's always kind of like, yeah, you have to be a horror online person to just overlook everything with the excuse of, well, it's horror. So,
you know what I think it is? I think people who identify as being members of the horror community just have inadequate taste. And what's happened, not just in the horror genre, more particularly, I'll give you a Survivor comparison here. They only cast super fans on that show now who know the entire lore of the series and they want to be like this character or that character from several years ago. Yeah. These modern horror movies do the exact same thing because it's horror super fans who are like, remember that moment in Texas Chainsaw? And I think that this opening here in Late Night with the Devil, the Stacey Keach voiceover at the beginning, I think, is a callback to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that opens with John Larroquette doing his voiceover, and they explain that. And clearly, yeah, you know, they recreated, I think, with the remake that Marcus Nispel, I think, is the director, wound up doing. And maybe he got John Larroquette again, or he got somebody. And it's kind of a similar thing to that. I think it's all just callbacks and references, and nobody's interested in doing original things. All of the exorcism demonic sequences in the movie, there's nothing original there. You've seen four or five different versions of this from the past 20 years alone. And I knew going into the movie that this was just going to be a total disappointment for me because it had Shudder written all over it. And when that logo came up, it was just a sense of, oh, fuck. All right. You know, I was on such a roll to, I tried to have such an active week in Massachusetts, and I accomplished that, but it really ended on a low note with this fucking movie. I got to see Mario perform. I got to see the Orwells perform live in concert. I got some cool footage of that. Got to meet all those guys. Very talented, very friendly people. Had a great, great time. Kenny was certainly well behaved. That was a miracle. And I also got to go to the movies and see a 35 millimeter screening of House, which I've realized watching House, the 77 Nobuko Obayashi film, with a crowd of people who had never seen it before, grates on my nerves because they're so eager to laugh at like minuscule things. And eventually they warm up to other things in the movie that become repetitive. But it was a great time. That was a great time. I watched the new Wim Wenders movie, Perfect Days, which we watched the trailer to Lucky Fritz, and I had a Alex Garland moment where I was just like, I'm no longer in love with filmmaking. Why am I part of something that creates this? But then I watched Perfect Days. I was like, oh, this is great. This is perfect. No pun intended.
Oh, right. I was like, what the fuck was Lucky Fritz? And
Yeah, right. I'm glad you blocked that out. I'm sorry to remind you. That was really painful. That really is just embarrassing for anyone who's ever picked up a camera, that movie. But Perfect Days is a terrific, terrific film. I didn't realize Wim Wenders was still on the ball in terms of his filmmaking, since I hadn't been impressed with anything he'd done in maybe about 40 years. So that was a great surprise too. And then Late Night with the Devil. Jesus Christ, way to bring me down at the end of that stay in New England. I walked out of there. I was just like, I hated every part of that. The common complaint I've seen with this movie is that it's good up until the ending. The ending takes it too far. They go too far with it. It gets too wacky, whatever. And my feeling...
Do they do the thing that I feel a lot of horror filmmakers have been using as a escape clause to excuse bullshit, which is cosmic horror? Do they use the cosmic horror excuse of like, well, this is weird because it's cosmic horror, and it doesn't have to make sense because it's cosmic horror, you know? Lovecraft, have you read his stuff? I haven't, but I've heard that it's cosmic horror, you know? That's been used lately as like a shield for mediocrity, and most of the times it's used is not used well. So it's just kind of like, okay, still shit.
No, but they do take a little bit of the aesthetics of cosmic horror. Do you want me to spoil this movie? I'll half spoil it for you, okay? I'll just explain what happens. I won't say what happens from that point on. So for those of you, I never do spoiler warnings, but for those who haven't seen Late Night with the Devil, it's dropping on Shudder on the 19th of April. Bow out right now and just like hit that fast forward button on the Apple Podcast or Spotify app 3 or 4 times, and you should be okay. Things shit hits the fan with this possessed squirrel that he brings on the show. People are dying, and there's a moment where she is fully absorbed by the demon that's in her. And also, the demon and Satanist names in this movie are so shit. It fucking sucks. She's part of a satanic cult as a baby. And the satanic cult leader, who's modeled after Anton LaVey, his name is Diablo.
Diablo.
Yeah, but Diablo.
Ooh.
Yeah. And he is vaguely
Satanas.
Hispanic. Yeah. And they don't, you know.
Who's in there? You know, when they do that show, it's just like, oh, Hitler is the demon in here. Yeah. Oh, no.
No, that would have been cool. I've been on a big Hitler Nazi kick lately. I'm not into Nazism, but like, I'm very into. I better stop
the,
right
the
now.
Ideology. Yeah. The beliefs. No. Yep.
I went to go see Hans Jürgen Cyberberg's Hitler. Our Hitler, a film from Germany at the Lincoln Film Center. It was the first screening there since 1980 when Francis Ford Coppola brought that movie to the United States. And then I got so invested in his filmmaking and his trajectory as a German, where he's like, yes, the Nazis are terrible. They ruined everything. This was such a big mistake. And it was such a big mistake because ultimately the Jews won. And that's so much worse than anything else that could have happened. And she's like, whoa, that's an interesting position to have taken after doing this definitely not pro-Hitler movie. It just took him 25 years to come around to it. You know? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I don't know if I'm on board with that, but it's interesting. It's certainly interesting to have that sort of opinion, I think.
So did that make you go into a binge of History Channel Hitler documentaries?
No, that's all boring to me. I like all the weird niche stuff. I've really actually been into German filmmaking lately, which aligns perfectly. It's all just been German and Japanese, the Axis Alliance of World War II. But anyway, Axis sounds like Abraxas, and that's the demon that's in the little girl in Late Night with the Devil. They don't call him the devil. They pull a Pazuzu. They go, oh, it's Abraxas, and he's been summoned by Diablo.
Isn't Abraxas a band?
Maybe it is. Sounds familiar.
Yeah. That sounds like one of those hair bands. I think my uncle used to listen to this shit with like Journey and Journey was not a heavy metal band for the
certainly not.
Oh,
but
it's a Santana song, and it's a Carol Santana song. That's
Santana,
so scary.
What does that sound like? Satan.
Oh shit, that sounds like Diablo.
Exactly.
Santana. If you switch a couple of letters there, yeah, that sucks. That's so
well,
see, but that's the thing, like, fucking, oh, go on.
Let me spoil what happens here. So the girl's head.
Hold on. So maybe press fast forward a couple of more times, because I think
again, sorry, you just kind of skip past my Nazi part. So what happens is her head splits open with all this weird energy, and a bunch of people on stage die, a bunch of main characters die. And I guess this is what people think took it too far before you get into the lead characters' delusions, and it's a replay of everything that happened leading up to the show that night, which is essentially implying that, you know, and I Jack makes this point plenty of times on his Twitter and on his show, but this sort of mainstreaming of the whole Epstein pedophile whatever thing, and how that's sort of overblown, or like it's thrown onto things that don't really fit within that mold.
Yeah, what the fuck?
They do a little bit of that. They do a little bit of the, you got to sell your soul or somebody's soul if you want to make it in this business. And the implication is that he sold his wife's soul to become a popular late night host or something. She gets cancer, even though she doesn't smoke. And I just kept thinking the entire time, this cancer effect, this chemo effect looks fucking gay. We made Nick Joroff look so much better in Mass State Lottery coming this year. I promise you, it's a blood oath. So
yeah, and all you had to do was shave his entire head and
twice
be unhealthy for like 3 years.
Well, he took care of half of that for me leading up. So
yeah, and then just shaved his eyebrows and his beard and head and give him a little oxygen mask, and then it's all up to performance.
Exactly. You can do a lot with a little, I like to say.
Yeah.
So it gets very, I guess you would call it science fiction-y for a moment in terms of the visuals. And when that happens and the characters start dying, I'm like, okay, I like this. This is good.
This bit, yeah.
All this shit doesn't register as sincere. It's not 1970s. It's not found footage. The acting's bad, and the acting is only bad because the writing is bad. Everyone would be acting better in that movie if the, you know, it felt like an early draft of an unprofessional script from somebody within that Portland soy horror community. And I hate that. I despise that so much. So I wasn't happy with Late Night with the Devil. And I, you know, I have nothing against David Dismalchian, but the talk about his performance in this movie is so overblown. It's really, I understand being sentimental and like having the feel good story or whatever, but it's not called for here. He didn't do a whole lot with that character. He doesn't have the dimension that's maybe required for that. He's just doing his typical David Dismalchian, I'm the 12th billed actor in this movie style of acting.
I'm sorry, but so he's been getting why are people like this? He has a career of 84 movies that he's in. Sure, he's never the main role. He's never the, I mean, I don't want to say never because I haven't seen the 84 movies that he's
well
in,
now he is or now, 84 now this project. Is this is his only one, but, I believe.
Yeah, he's doing, yeah, a lot. Blade Runner, Relaxer, which I know you're a fan. He was in Twin Peaks. So he's done a lot of cool shit, let's say. For people to just praise his performance just because it's a feel-good story. Are people still falling for Hollywood feel-good? Also, this is not Hollywood. This is an independent movie. You star an independent movie. So it's like, are you, is everyone just going to be like, well, no, he's a perfect, well.
I hope so. Yeah, they better do that. I'd love to see that happen. That would be great. I have a feeling it won't, but that's okay. Yeah. Maybe if I saw an 83 more movies, that'll happen.
It's just, it's so weird to me the way that people review movies now, because there's so many things that are involved in the reviewing of the movie where the quality of what you're actually watching is not the most important part, or if it works, or if the dialogue is good, or if the story makes sense, or if the characters make stupid decisions that don't make sense and only work to move the plot along. They just forget about all that because it's like, well, what's the overarching story with this? It's a movie where very few things happen. That's very experimental and very new, and no one's done it before, even though they have. I just don't know shit. So 100, it's amazing, it's perfect. I hate talking like this about movie reviewing because we like do this show, obviously, but there's so many worthless voices in the internet movie reviewing space, I guess, that especially the most the loudest voices, because they're the ones that are afraid of like talking about anything that might be, you know, not go with the main narrative of the big group or whatever. But yeah, most of the reviews that you see on movies that are popular or that have very high scores usually don't have anything to do with the actual movie, or you have to get to like paragraph 5 to be like, oh cool, you finally talk about the plot, you know. Yeah. Not about how brave the director is or how whatever they grew up, whatever, and that's supposed to matter in how I enjoy the film, you know.
Yeah, I think people are just too consumed with all the benefits of playing nice, and they choose that conformity instead of trying to embrace any sort of fierce independent spirit or voice. And it's easier because you make your bones that way. You have a lot to gain from being nice and not a whole lot to gain from being honest or being critical about something. And, you know, I didn't want to savage this movie. I was being generous because I paid for the fucking tickets. And honestly, it was a matinee, so I didn't even pay that much. But I gave it 2 stars on my letterbox. If I had watched it directly on streaming, I have a feeling I would have given it a star. But I don't know. Maybe there's something I'll find that I liked about this movie, Late Night with the Devil. But I did walk out of that. I was like, yeah, that was exactly what I expected. The only thing that looked cool was the little girl's head splitting open for a second. That looked cool.
But there's also that thing about how when something starts getting universal praise, and I don't know if it's just something that happens. I mean, I'm sure it's not something that happens to me, but that immediately puts me off something. Yeah. And I'm usually right. And it sucks because it shouldn't be like that. But I feel like a lot of the time there.
Before or after you watch something?
Before.
Mm-hmm.
Before I watch something, if it's something that I see mostly positive shit, and it's not that it, I don't believe it affects my enjoyment of the thing, but and I usually have to either avoid reviews or separate. Like if I see that something got a high score like this on Rotten Tomatoes, I don't read anything about it if I'm still interested in watching it. And if it's something that I'm really not interested, I check a couple of reviews, and if they just don't say anything that I care about, I don't watch it. But I feel like whenever something gets like a 90, there's no way. You know, they're not reviewing movies that should be getting those scores, and those are not the movies that are get the attention and get the retweets and get the online presence of look at how this Men in Tights movie got a high score.
Robin Hood Men in Tights,
sure, just whatever superhero, you know, those are the ones that whenever they get a high rating, those are the ones that get all the attention.
Well, think about what it means to have a 90% on some. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes in particular, sure, but just if 90% of critics, let's not even consider Rotten Tomatoes. If 90% of critics are saying this is a great movie, this is a good movie, and there's not a real conversation that's happening about it, just an observation about what makes this movie good, it's probably not that interesting. Yeah. And I think that has a lot to do with why we see these movies that are critically acclaimed and they win awards. They fade out pretty fast if they're not actually worth what they've been made out to be worth. I think about something like even some of the better ones, like Moonlight from 2017, or maybe it was 2018, it won the Academy Award. I thought that was a great movie. Yeah. Then it wins Best Picture because the Birth of a Nation movie, that whole scandal nulls that film. Basically, the director became persona non grata after it turned out that there was a woman he was accused of leading into a gang rape and maybe participating in a gang rape. She killed herself. They blamed him for that. When that movie won Best Picture, Moonlight, in place of that, because that was groomed to be that, it made me reconsider, is this movie actually that good? And the conclusion I drew is, it's a good movie. It's not that good of a movie. But I think it being so overblown has made it disappear. And that's a better example of one of these Best Picture winners. We often rag on movies like Coda or Nomadland, which...
yeah.
70% of the people who fucking voted for those movies probably didn't even watch them.
Mm-hmm.
Those movies are never going to be heard from again. Those directors are probably never going to be heard from again. So what does it mean to be a good movie when the audience that's observing and deeming that good or bad is what it is? Not a lot. It's not worth a lot. And I don't think it, you know, that title or that recognition is anything of note. And that's what people are coming around to slowly but surely. And all these horror movies with 100% on Rotten Tomatoes from the past 4 or 5 years, who's really talking about? No one. People are still watching the same fucking horror movies they've always been watching, yeah, which is Halloween, it's Friday the 13th Part 4, it's the Nightmare on Elm Street series, maybe a Saw or two,
Chucky,
and that's it.
Texas Chainsaw. And
yeah. And no one's even talking about the new Chucky stuff. So
yeah, which is still going, I think, just shows you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, that horrible Hellraiser killed that franchise once again.
I saw the director was like, yeah, the next movie, it's going to be even crazier. I was like, it wasn't fucking crazy to begin with, man. That's a very low bar. You had the least crazy Hellraiser. And there were some really shitty direct-to-video Hellraiser movies in the 90s that Weinstein put out, and they're in space, and they're doing this. It's just, you didn't do anything. You made it for tweens.
So, yeah, you made it for Hulu. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So
I'm assuming that's not happening. I think a lot of it also has to do with how people enjoy art, right? Because I personally like things that push the envelope a little bit or are done differently than what I would find on a mainstream production or a mainstream movie or a movie with a big actor. I usually try to side more with like the weirdo guy stories or like the stories that are a little, that look a little different or that are, you know, people that speak a little differently than what you usually get on social media or if you spend 20 minutes on TikTok. So for me, whenever all these movies get universal praise, I don't know if it's that internal bias that I have or that most of those movies kind of fall into that category of low effort, but very familiar. So they become very popular because the things that they're seeing are not really pushing anything. It's just kind of like using nostalgia in a way where it makes you feel cozy and familiar. So it doesn't have to be good because you can just put it on and, oh, this movie makes me feel good. But is it actually something that you'll be watching in 5-6 years because it something reminds you of it other than you know, how it's making you feel cozy and safe right now? And that's my big problem with these big movies, that they're so dull and so lacking interesting characters that are not just washed and safe and afraid. I feel like most protagonists now in movies are just afraid, and that sucks, you know, because they have to be perfect. And that's the worst kind of main character to me, when the main character is perfect, because it's just like, I don't care. I don't want to follow this perfect character, you know? Give me I'd rather have an avatar for the audience that doesn't really speak much and doesn't do much, and it's more about the world around them, than having someone that's just very safe and very clean and very, you know, he's not going to cross anything. You know that if he does anything bad, he's not really bad. It's just, you know, it's a white lie so that he wouldn't hurt someone's feelings or something like that. And that shit's just right.
There's always
just
a justifiable.
Watch a fucking soap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The soaps are probably more interesting with their character developments. True. I'll give you an example. There was some guy who got kicked off a soap that my mom watches because he didn't want to get the vaccine. But then a couple years later, no one cares about that anymore. So they're like, why don't we just bring him back? And so, we killed him off. But actually, he had to fake his own death to become an assassin for the U.S. government. And he killed the son of this other character, but by accident. And he's so gray. He's a conflicted man, you know, and now he's in witness protection or so. I don't know. So that's what you get on the soaps. Everybody's good and evil for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember growing up, all those Mexican soaps were always about some poor girl that falls in love with a rich man because one day she was collecting trash outside of his house and he saw her and he saw how dirty she was. But he was like, oh, my God, she's so beautiful with all that shit on her face and that hair full of everything. And it looks like it's got stink lines coming out of her head.
Yeah, you wear that can of green beans so well, he said to her.
Yeah. And he falls in love with her because she just looked at him. But then there's evil mom who dominates this man in his entire life. And she doesn't want him to be with the person that makes him happy. He wants to be with the bitch who's hot and rich, but she's a bitch that hates everyone. And that's it. Like, that's the premise for everything that I remember my grandparents used to watch, like, 3 hours of that shit in Mexico. And it was just like, oh, a different story. Everyone's just a little older. That's great. Okay. Same thing. Cool. Another hour of this thing of just extreme close-ups before we go to commercials.
Classic Cinderella tales, and they know exactly who their audience is. But you know what Latin Americans love these days is Godzilla Kong, the new empire.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest movie. Yeah. 30. Oh. I read this. I had a sense. I have this this visual in my head of a Central American family of obese people showing up at the Times Square AMC theater for Godzilla Kong. And goddamn, if that wasn't right, 36% yep. of the audience that showed up for Godzilla Kong, the new empire, is Latin Americans.
Of course.
How Everyone about that? Kong. Yes. Yeah. That's terrible. Why such bad taste, Hans?
Because they love blockbusters. They just want loud shit hitting each other on a big screen. And
30, hold on. I don't think 36% showed up for Dune Part 2, though. It was specifically Godzilla Kong.
Well, yeah, because they saw Dune Part 1 and they were like, this shit fucking boring essay. Yeah. This fucking sucks essay. You're going to need to bring the chelas to drink inside of here because this shit is boring. All these crackers doing nothing. That brown girl with no personality and no... Yeah, no. Mm. Why would they? You got a Godzilla in it. You saw the last Godzilla movie. I actually didn't. No, wait, I did. The one I didn't see was the King of Monsters one, which is... Yeah, that's the one that appeals to me the most because I love those old monsters. But I just never got around to it. And this new one really put me off after the last one, the Godzilla versus Kong. I was just kind of like, I should love this. Like, this is the shit that I grew up with. Like, this is like I should be excited about this. But the first American Godzilla, no, not the first one, the second one, because I actually did like the first one in the theater. I was a little boy. The second one was a huge disappointment for me from that director. That's, I don't know, where is he now? What was his name?
Oh, Gareth sorry. Edwards? You were talking about the 2014 Godzilla?
Yeah.
Yeah, Gareth Edwards didn't he do The Creator?
Oh, Creator. Right, I didn't see that. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I know. So starting there, I think that's where this universe, Monsterverse started, right? With Aaron Taylor Johnson
the
soldier
Bond.
That was more important. He's a new Bond?
Yeah, isn't that boring?
How are you going to give an actor that has no charisma the role of James Bond?
You know, I just watched this Luther, I think it was direct to Netflix movie, because I watched the first season of Luther, and I remember thinking, this is good. And then by the third episode, I was like, it just became every other BBC show. This fucking, you know, they don't know how to write these things. They start good or they get good talent and they don't give them a good script. But then I decided to check this movie out because it also had Andy Serkis, and it actually was pretty all right. It was okay, especially for that type of movie. And it was shot well. It was actually surprisingly shot pretty well. I would so much rather be boring, just give that audience what they want. The Idris Elba as Bond variation, like that everyone's been saying for 15 years, and then you have right-wing people that are like, oh no, but he's black. But like, who gives a shit? Who the fuck is good that's like a white British? I mean, you could say Henry Cavill, right? But that's a little on the nose, and he'll have like 15 years of shit movies where he can hop into that role if he really needs it. Idris Elba's getting a little just do one or two. He would be great. He'd be great in that role. Aaron Taylor Johnson's such a bore. Just watch that Godzilla 2014 movie and you'll understand he has lost all his charisma from Kick-Ass and around that time. So that Godzilla movie blew. The King of the Monsters movie actually I thought was probably better.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
I watched it on HBO in the middle of the day. I think I took a nap for 20 minutes of it and then woke up and I was like, Mothra or somebody, or Ghidorah. Cool.
Ghidorah, yeah. And then you have Kong Island, your favorite?
That's the worst one by far. Absolutely the worst. I'm glad Jordan Vogt Roberts doesn't seem to have much of a career anymore. He's one of these offenders of being a super fan and not building any real new moments. Just saying, hey, look at Akira Jacket. Hey, it's Steve Brule acting like Steve Brule.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a fucking break. Kyle Chandler and Millie Bobby Brown were good in the Godzilla sequel. And then honestly, I think the one I enjoyed the most was Godzilla vs. Kong. But I think so. I mean, I'd have to go and watch it again. But my impression was I thought this movie was going to be terrible and it's bad, but it's all right.
It's fun. Yeah, it's what you want.
Especially during COVID. When we were getting a new movie a month on HBO Max, that movie was a fun surprise for, I think, March it came out.
Is Jordan Bog Roberts still doing Metal Gear Solid, or is
he
that
better not be? Someone better cut Oscar his hands Isaac. Off. Nah,
Oscar Isaac.
I don't think that's you happening.
But Solid Snake is gonna be 5'4". That's hilarious.
he doesn't carry the sort of ruggedness that Solid Snake needs. I think I would cast Hugh Jackman as Solid Snake.
He's got the look.
Yeah.
I think he's 70?
I mean, he's putting on that Wolverine costume again because there's no other directors or studios calling him anymore since he said, all right, I'm done. Took him what? Not even 10 years. And he's back in the suit. So give that 55. To him. That ain't that old.
Yeah, no, that's not old, though. I don't know why I thought he would be much older. What do you mean? He's doing a Big Mouth and a voice for Human Resources and a voice for Rick and Morty. And he was a voice in Free Guy, that Ryan Reynolds movie.
He doesn't have a memorable voice. Why would they do that?
Damn, what the fuck? I don't know why I thought his career was better than this. I guess the whole Wolverine thing had me a little... Oh, Prisoners is good.
Yeah, he's got a few. He would get a good role tossed to him every so often. Like, he's in Les Miserables. Did he win an Oscar for Les Miserables?
Is that a good role? Is that what you're saying?
He was all right in Les Miserables. I like that Les Miserables movie with Russell Crowe's crazy singing.
Horrible.
That was awesome.
No, he was nominated, let me see, for one Oscar, and that was for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role, Les Miserables. Wow. Okay. I don't know. I saw it with college student eyes when that came out, and I was like, this fucking sucks. I hate musicals, and these people can't sing.
That made it better. That's what I thought made it charming, they didn't know how to... They were not professionally trained actors, and I didn't know a whole lot about Les Miserables. I knew some of the songs because I remember downloading some of them on Aries back in the day. Because I don't, oh, wow. I've just, I've, yeah, I don't it's, know. I, I've always had
a theater kid.
No, I've always had like a slight fascination with like 80s Broadway. And that was how I was acquainted with that. And then I saw the movie and I had no enthusiasm going into the movie. My ex dragged me into it. And I came out liking it more than she did. So
I want to go through his career so that you can tell me which five movies are his best.
Okay. We're taking a look at Hugh Jackman's IMDb right now. If you are not a member of patreon.com/lowres and watching the video version of this, we need another $100 tier selection, folks. Patreon.com/lowres. All right, we're taking a look. We have X-Men, Swordfish, Kate and Leopold, which... Pause. I watched an old TRL only a week ago, and he was on there and awkwardly hugging some Asian girl and some chubby white girl to promote this movie, Kate and Leopold. Yeah. And he gave out like keychains from the movie or something.
Nice. TRL.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. Van Helsing, X-Men,
Three.
The Last Stand, Three. The Fountain. Okay. I think The Fountain.
Okay, so this too, right? Prestige too.
The Prestige. Happy Feet. So that's the start of his voice acting career. Australia is one I've been meaning to watch. That's Baz Luhrmann. They just released a new version of it for Hulu with a new title. That's a series. X-Men Origins. I remember the work print of that getting leaked when I was in some grade. I don't know. I remember watching that and that was horrible. X-Men First Class.
Movie 43.
Real Steel.
Prisoners, definitely.
Yeah. It was great. The Wolverine. I remember that is what people
that's
wanted
not the one.
Logan to be.
Oh, when he goes to Japan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That movie wasn't good. X-Men Days of Future Past. I think I'm going to rewatch these X-Men movies soon.
Those three or all of them?
Maybe all of them. Chappie.
Well, the Brett Ratner ones?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it's one Brett Ratner one.
Yeah. They threw him in Apocalypse too. Damn, they couldn't sit him out of one fucking movie.
Nope.
That's the one nobody watched either.
He's the face. He had to be.
Yeah.
Who else is memorable from those movies?
I guess. I have you seen X-Men Apocalypse?
No, I don't. I think that's the one that I never saw.
Yeah, nobody saw it. Logan.
He was Blackbeard and Pan. Yep.
Okay. The Front Runner, Missing Link, Bad Education, Free Guy. This is when
What does this sound familiar? Is that the? Oh, I've been meaning to watch this. I don't know why. I think it has something to do with the director and the movies he's directed, maybe. But
who
I remember
this?
That. Corey Finley. No, that doesn't sound familiar. Was it Thoroughbreds? I don't know. I just remember seeing this name and I was like, okay, that sounds like kind of like a Big Short type of movie. Become prime suspects in the unfolding of a single largest public school embezzlement scandal. Yeah, and the cast looked fine, but I think it's one
Ray
of
Romano. Okay, now yeah. I'm in. Count me in for that one.
But yeah, I don't think did we pick. I think we got three, four. We got four up to here.
I think he got some award buzz for The Greatest Showman. I've never seen that movie, really.
The movie when Steve Carell pretends to be a magician. Oh no, it's not. You know,
I thought you were
going
to say when he pretends to be a gay man who's obsessed with women and makes little dolls about them. Marwyn Call.
What is that?
We talked about this, I think, with Jerry briefly, because Jerry also knew the real story. Because there's a documentary called Welcome to Marwyn Call. And then they made a film version of it called Welcome to Marwyn. Steve Carell played the guy. And in reality, they paint like so this movie painted its subject as a gay man who suffers a hate crime and he's misunderstood and he's a good guy and people come around and empower him. But the actual story is he was a fucking freak who would make dolls of women in the town. And then he tried to pull something at a bar. He was being creepy and got the shit beat out of him. And it was labeled a hate crime because one of the guys called him a faggot or fag. And then they made a Steve Carell feel good fucking movie about him. But like everyone knew he was a creep. Everyone knew he was a sick guy. So
what do you mean? It says that it was a beautiful therapeutic outlet here of making strange women into dolls and then press them. Like,
isn't that
Grandma's
the Hollywood
boy.
Move? Yeah. Well, go to the actual documentary here. Welcome to Marwyn Call.
Wait, that's not. No,
no, this is the movie that they made. That was based on the documentary.
Marwyn Call? Like that?
Yes. That's it.
Oh.
And if there's one thing you have to learn and have to know in 2024, it's that documentaries are basically evil. If you watch them like they're a report of truth, purely truth, you're making a big mistake. And I've seen people responding to, I didn't even know this was a thing until about a week and a half ago, because I saw it on the Costa Rican theater, as we like to call it. But there was an HBO Max Alex Jones, the People vs. Alex Jones documentary.
Oh,
some people were like,
yeah, no,
this motherfucker deserves everything he has coming to him. It's so satisfying. He got fined $1 billion. And it's just like, how are you like this shut off to like seeing people in two dimensions? You know, this guy's a big public figure. Like, you can just find anything. Oh, I'm so glad he doesn't have the power he had before. He seems more mainstream and normal now. Like, more people seem to like Alex Jones now than they ever have. So, I don't know.
How much
anyway.
Power did he have? He was like a niche, like, right-wing radio guy, right? That, I mean, he had a following just like what Mancow had a following, you know? That doesn't mean he's powerful. That doesn't mean he's, you know, causing... Brain rot is what he's caused, kind of like the Trump thing. Because number one, how do you wish that someone gets, how much was the thing that he
the
has
fine?
To pay, like 150 something million or something ridiculous like that?
Trump's bond was $175 million,
which
has been paid.
Alex Jones,
a billion, it's billions.
Because
he killed those children one after another. Don't you know that? He showed up at the school and he choked them out. That's what actually happened.
The worst thing is that I think I find more disgusting that the parents of those children, yeah, use their kids as shields to make careers out of them now that they're dead. Because now they're authors and now they're like doing fundraisers and anti-gun and all this shit. And it's like, you're just standing on your child's corpse to make money. Because,
like, yeah. Just, I mean, yeah. It's a pretty grimy situation regardless. And I've gone at those parents before over like this ridiculous lawsuit. But the reality is it's not, I don't think it's them. I think they're being manipulated by attorneys who have a greater purpose that they're trying to fulfill, which is taking down the influence of Alex Jones. And if you're one of those parents, Alex Jones did say, oh, maybe the school shooting didn't happen. He said whatever he said. Yeah. And if someone who I didn't even know that well died, and somebody online is like, they didn't really die, this is a fucking manipulated, I'd be like, fuck you. I want to see you taken down next. I want to see the worst things happen to you. So I understand that perspective because it's their kids. But understand what you're never going to see that money. What are you going to get, $150 check a month? And you're putting your blames onto somebody. Like, you want to punish somebody because you can't punish anybody for what happened. It's a complicated situation, but that ain't the way to go about it and be a decent person, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Marwyn Call, official theatrical trailer.
The SS took me. He tied me up, then started cutting me.
Started put a scar massaging my shaft,
was damaged,
rubbing my testicles aggressively, causing slight pain Mark mixed with pleasure.
Catch your hand off my penis! So what? So
when the teenagers kicked my head to pieces, they wiped all memory of everything. Well, it's the first thing I gotta work on. That's my imagination. Everything's real. The slide on the 45, the clip even comes out. Sorry. Everybody has a dream. Everybody wishes they had a double that could do the things that they could never do.
There's always something.
Why are they naked?
I've taken you know why. Many battles. We usually come out on top.
The SS had me tied up. The girls went into the church. They eliminated the
So he
SS.
Photographs Her this and creates stories with photos?
Proved to me that she loved me. So this is my
I don't think he photographed her. I think he would just play. You just create situations.
Really? That's just creepier somehow. What the fuck is this thing in the background? Look.
To me that Which side are we looking
what
at?
What is here? What is this? Do you see this thing over here? Look.
It looks like a bowl.
So this is my
a plant. Yeah, it's got like I don't know if it's a plant. Can it look like something with like in like strings? I don't know. I'm tizzing out over here or something. That doesn't matter.
There's a lot going on here. This reminds me of I Think We're Alone Now, the documentary
I was about to say that.
Show DC.
Yeah.
First saw Mark. He's in his full World War II regalia. Like, oh hey, how's it going? What's that all about?
Hey, is that what you say to someone that's just wearing World War II regalia? I think you just cross the street. Share with other people.
There's a curator of an art gallery that wants to display my photos.
Oh, he does take photos, okay.
What is this leads to tension and it's bad for him. Will he make it to the city?
It's like this is the one last thing that I don't ever want taken from me. I built Marwyn Call for me, for my therapy.
It gets stranger by the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty strange from the beginning, I think. But okay, but this doesn't really say anything. Like, this kind of feels like an uplifting, you know, we're gonna tell a nice story documentary over here. So I don't know, you know, what Lores was alluding to. If let me see, he was attacked for 5 minutes out of a bar one night, spent 9 days in a coma and another 40 days in the hospital recovering. His injuries left him with brain damage and amnesia about his life before the attacks. So unable to afford therapy, he developed his own elaborate form of it, creating an elaborate fantasy world in his own backyard with the help of dolls. He calls the towns he builds Merwin Cool. Cole, sorry. Okay, so now, I mean, I guess we've been doing documentaries about autistic people forever, but at least that trailer didn't give me any type of like weird vibes about this guy or anything. It was just like, oh, this mentally ill guy takes pictures of dolls that are naked by the river, where a man holding a doll of a man holding a rifle is standing above them.
I think you got to watch the documentary to get a better understanding. And also, there's a lot of stuff that did not come out even in that documentary, I think, about why he was beaten up to begin with, because he was being weird. He was it wasn't just this. I don't believe
it was his penis and
no, he's not a gay guy. He's a straight guy. Oh. They portrayed him in that Steve Carell movie as a gay guy.
Oh, that, imagine someone's telling your story and it's like, yeah, and after Laura's Wonder Bread was done sucking three dicks, he decided to go get some gelato at 3 a.m. It's like, wait a second, that's not how this happened.
And then it becomes a hate crime. Yeah, that's what happens here. So that's a fun treat for anyone who's a doll enthusiast, I guess, is Merwin Cool. I wonder why we changed it. The title,
yeah,
it's not
how did this title come along? What made you think of this? Steve Carell,
I know,
Wolverine,
Wolverine. Steve Carell would be a great Solid Snake,
yeah.
I think that was probably
so.
Monsterverse.
So, Hugh Jackman has 4 good movies. I don't think we got to the 5th one.
No, he doesn't have enough range. He's a Broadway theater guy who gets away with playing an action star. People love Wolverine. Did you see the X-Men 97 series? I know we don't, and I don't endorse adults watching cartoons, but whatever you do behind closed doors is your business, not mine. But did you watch X-Men 97 by any chance?
No, it's on Disney Plus. I don't pay for that stuff.
You don't pay for anything. You could get it on YTS, I'm sure.
No, they don't do TV shows. They only do movies. I have to look for it. And that's the thing. I'm just lazy. I'm sure. I don't know. I was about to say I'm sure I like it, but that's not true. Because every time I try to revisit things that I liked as a kid, I never like them as an adult. And the little that I've seen of this, I don't know. I just don't like the animation. Even though the animation from the 90s was kind of not great. But
it's bad in a different way now. It's bad in a way that registers as cheap. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have compared it to Newgrounds and things from the early aughts, because they put a lot of attention, or more attention, not necessarily a lot of attention, into the character designs, but not fluid animation. And that was a big tap out point with a lot of the DC animated movies for me, is they got so comfortable with certain designs, and then they just would do like very janky anime style levels of animation at times, and not high quality anime. So I can't really watch new animation for anything. But this X-Men 97 series, I guess, is apparently nothing like that show. They have some of the voice actors back. The designs, I guess, are close enough, but they take it in like a 30-something direction, 30-something, the 1980s adult drama on TV. Like Jean Grey is pregnant, she's got to go to the hospital, and she doesn't have health insurance, so they can't deliver the baby. So Rogue has to take over a doctor's, like his powers, to perform a delivery and do that. So that's an episode.
There's no mutant doctors. There's not one doctor that's a mutant that would be able
health insurance is the problem here, Hans. Not mutant or human. It's she's not covered, because that's the American
health insurance
government.
And health insurance stopped the most powerful mutant in the universe. I think Jean Grey is, right, when she becomes the Phoenix or whatever,
the Dark Phoenix. Yeah,
yeah. So she couldn't just do her little doo-doo-doo thing and then have him bypass it. She forgot, I guess, that she could do that. That's cool.
She didn't want to abuse her powers or something.
Yeah. So that sounds like a very interesting drama, very interesting writing. Can't wait to see that unfold on shitty Happy Tree Friends like animation. That's great. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't watch animation anymore. And every time I've tried, I tried watching Rocko's Modern Life the other day, and I was like, this is cool. I can watch 2 episodes and that's it. Like, there's nothing that kind of grabs me or that I've tried to see. And I mean, I guess I'm talking about a cartoon that was from 20 years ago or whatever, but it was something that I actually liked. So I thought he might grab me again. And it's like, okay, I like the humor they use. I fine. But it's very episodic. So, no, wait, episodic is when, yeah, when every episode is like contained, right? So yeah. After watching 2 episodes of Rocko, I was like, I think I've seen Rocko. That's cool. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's no animation that I've tried to watch, because I have tried. HBO Max is full of animation, and most of it is like older. So I'm like, okay, cool. I added a bunch to my list, and I was like, okay, let's go through this shit. I just can't get into it. I don't know. It's just not.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I think I might have said this on The Bang. Is I put on Dragon Ball Super or something after seeing that, yeah, something. I was just prompted to be like, all right, I'll throw that on. But even as like a passive, I'm working and just need something on the TV, like I can't do that. I wind up going back to Unsolved Mysteries or anything like that. I can't do animation, just like I can't play video games. It's just past. I'm past that point now. I can't take the same enjoyment that I used to. I think too much about time management, and even just that sort of passive time management is just, well, I could throw on something that's gonna invigorate me a little more, like music or anything. Yeah, really.
I feel like I've gotten to the point with video games too, and it sucks because I have a PlayStation 5 that I bought last year, but I feel like every time I turn it on, I'm just kind of like, I just sit there for like 20 minutes before I do anything, and then I play for a little bit and I'm just like, I don't actually want to do this. Mm-hmm. And I haven't spent money on a game in a long time. It's just and I'm not saying I'm doing anything better with my time, because I'm not, but I don't know, there's just those type of things that just don't really catch my attention anymore, so I'm just kind of indifferent. A lot of my friends have tried to like give me animes to adult animes. You like horror? You would really get into this. And then I start watching and I'm like, no, I just can't. You know, I'm not rewatching anything. I'm not, you know, discovering new things either. It's just whenever it's animated. I told you I downloaded Paprika. I downloaded Akira just to rewatch it because it's been a couple of years. And I downloaded a couple of other like dark animes from the 80s. And I can't bring myself to even put them on because I just don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just kind of like, there's a very cool cyberpunk game that's a text to point and click game. Mm-hmm. That is from Japan. I wish I fucking remember what the name of the game is. But it's similar to, I think, one that you played when you had your Let's Play thing.
Well, it sounds like the Akira game that I played, which was 90% text and then maybe 1% actual gaming.
Snatcher, I think the game. Yeah, Snatcher. So that game is about a detective and it's in the future, and it's a lot of like, this is what it looks like. It's a lot of point and click type of thing. I like the look of it. I started playing it and then I was just like, I'm bored.
Very Blade Runner looking.
I don't care. Yeah. Very, very like retro futuristic type of thing. But I was just kind of like, it's difficult for anything to get my attention now, and it sucks because then I'm just restless, not actually doing anything with my time. But it's been difficult for me to get into shit. I watched a Peter Greenaway movie the other day.
Oh, which one?
Fuck, I just had it here and I closed.
Was it an older Peter Greenaway? Because there's a difference once you get out of the early 90s.
It's the one with the three women from like three different generations, and it's got Miranda Richardson in it.
Is it Drowning by Numbers?
Yes, that one.
Okay. I don't remember if I've seen Drowning, but maybe I have. I might own it. Yeah,
you gave it 4 stars, and it says all the best Peter Greenaway elements in it.
Oh wow, that's your review. My memory's I'm getting old. If it has all the best Peter Greenaway elements, I can't fucking remember if I've seen it.
Yeah, it's just it's about three women that want to like kill their husband, so they
yes,
all
okay.
like yeah. It's pretty good. It is definitely one of his movies. I'm not very familiar with his work. I think only the two that we see, or the one I guess that we saw for an episode, but he's very Wes Anderson when it comes to his movies. You know what I
yeah.
mean? And not by quality, but I mean, if you're watching a Peter Greenwood movie, you know immediately that it's because it's kind of like a play. It's kind of like very grandiose and very big. Everything is wide, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that just by the visual aspect alone got my attention and like kind of brought me in because it's so different than anything that's out now. So he's definitely one that I feel like I need to dig into a little bit more, even though I know he doesn't have many movies. I think only like 10 or 8 or something.
He's got a healthy amount. There are some films from the late 70s, early 80s that he might have done for BBC or some with government funding. And he's still making movies. I think he has a movie that's coming out that he shot a couple of years ago. His later films definitely have a much different vibe than those, because he works, he changed DPs. He had a guy he was working with reliably in the 1980s that he worked on The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, and many of those films. That's why they have a particular vibe and look to them. And then you get to Eight and a Half Women, and the aesthetic of that is totally different from what you see in those movies that I just previously referenced. I think that might have started with The Pillow Book with Ewan McGregor. That's one that I haven't seen. I can't say if that's a definitive start point or what. But by the time you get to Eight and a Half Women and everything after that, there's a much more like sterile, kinetic vibe to the movies.
Cheaper production, I'm assuming. Because
Yeah. He loves to he loves to use stages and sets, and that's not something you see too often these days. I wish that would make a comeback.
Yeah, because it gives it a completely different feel to the movie. It's a little more like engaging, I guess, because it's so different than what you usually get. So you're kind of invested, especially the way that he presents the scenes and how he goes from scene to scene, and how everything just seems to be a set that has been rehearsed hundreds of times so that it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really see, like you said, you don't, what is the latest movie like that you've seen? Climax maybe, or no, that's the only one.
I wouldn't even say Climax, because Climax, I believe Climax was just it like an actual on location style shooting. You don't see people using sets or stages anymore. That was a big thing with, and I mentioned him earlier with the Our Hitler movie, Hans-Jürgen Cyberberg. All of his movies seem to be on stages and sets, and they're not concerned with presenting reality. I think so many people are afraid to embrace artifice and engage the viewer in that style of filmmaking now, because it comes across as cheap or low, and it wouldn't be low effort at all. As a matter of fact, it would probably take as much effort as anything you would shoot these days, but you don't see it often. Honestly, the last thing I can recall, and this I wouldn't even put into that category, that I've seen someone deliberately use that style of filmmaking was the $1 million extreme short-lived series Theater of the Air, because they went and did public access shit. And that has the vibe of that. That was the last thing I've seen to use that style. And is that worth watching? I don't know. That's up to you to decide. So maybe some of it. Some of it is actually quite funny. Other bits, well, I best not say. But that's the last of that. And I want it to come back, because House is that. The haunted house in House is a stage. Let's bring back stages. Yeah. Let's bring back sets like that. That's what I say.
Yeah. Effort in filmmaking and trying and directors with a vision that they fulfill, not just something that starts as something and then ends as something completely different because they were too lazy or too cowardly to continue.
Like Late Night with the Devil. That brings it right back to the theme of this show was Late Night with the Devil. That is going to bump the views up. All right. I think we can cap the show on that note. Let's have ourselves a quick think before we do wrap up. Is there anything you wanted to add or say before the program concludes tonight?
Nope. This was, I think we were able to pull it off, even though we didn't really have a movie. So that's
we definitely
good.
Did not. No, it might have felt a little ba-bang, but that's all right.
Yeah.
All right. I guess. All right. So that's it then. That has been movies for this week. I was getting comfortable. I was reclining in my chair like, all right, Hans is going to talk for another two, three minutes. Nope.
No.
No, that was the end of the
show. I'm sober today.
All right. Well, that has been movies for this week. Thank you for listening.